So just as you are Engineers Without Borders, we consider...
I'll flip it.
Yeah, you can flip it manually. We consider our also to be a township without borders, because although it has, of course, physical borders, like the human body has, it is a place that is connected to many centers and people all over the world. Now, the origin of Auroville finds its place in a vision of an Indian yogi and philosopher and writer called Aurobindo Ghosh. He has written a lot of books, but the core of maybe his approach is that he considers human beings as transitional beings. He basically says that we are, fortunately, not the end product of the evolution. The evolution continues. There are many people who think that we are the final product, you know, man is the super being, but Sri Aurobindo says no, we are a transitional being. And we are standing as humanity at a turning point. In fact, he even refers to it as an evolutionary crisis, because man is, you can say, neither an animal nor a superhuman being. Man is somewhere in between. We have something of animals in us, but we also have intelligence. We can behave as an animal, as we do in wars or when we are nasty with each other, but we can also behave as very nice intellectual people. So we are in a sort of a crisis. We are a transitional being. We are neither this nor that. We are in transit. That is his basic approach. And then he also says that there is something beyond what we see as the external world. There is an inner being. And we need to connect with that inner being of ours. He says the inner life becomes of the first importance, and the rest can only be its expression and outcome. In other words, whatever we see outside, the one people we are outside, is linked with an inner reality. And if you can connect with that inner reality, you can make a lot of progress in your spiritual life. A lady by the name Meera Alfasa, later she became known as the mother, joined the Sri Aurobindo Ashram and participated, helped grow the ashram. And in fact, when Sri Aurobindo more and more withdrew himself in his room, she became the person actually to physically manage the whole ashram. And it is with her energy and drive that the ashram school was started, the center for education, and that the ashram became what it is today. The mother had a dream already in 1965 of a new type of a city, a place which would be unique and could act as an instrument to hasten this evolutionary process of a change in consciousness. She has written this. She has basically said that those who are not satisfied with the world as it is today can come to Auroville. I mean, not that everybody who is dissatisfied should come to Auroville, but you are coming to Auroville because you feel something is missing. So for those who are satisfied with the world as it is, Auroville has probably no place. But people who come here are generally those people who have discovered that there is a gap somewhere in what they are doing. They feel an inner need to change. Next, please. And that's what she has conceptualized in what we know as Auroville. Yes, please. Auroville has this charter. It's a very unique charter, according to me, which the mother read out in 1968. There was an inauguration ceremony here nearby in a place called the Amphitheater, where young people from 136 countries put some soil. And this charter was read out. The mother did not come here. She read it out from Pondicherry, and through a radio line it was transmitted. Where there are four concepts. One is that Auroville belongs to nobody in particular. And that if you want to live in Auroville, you become a willing servant of the divine. That it is a place of constant progress and unending education. You keep on learning new things every day. that out of it was to be the bridge between the past and the future. There again comes in the transition, that evolutionary bridge. And that it will be a place of material and spiritual research for an active embodiment of human unity. Human unity plays a key role in this whole Auroville vision. So on 28, as I told you, 28 February 68, there was the inauguration. You can press the next button, Martin. This is the picture of that. As I said, young people from all over the world, many of them, of course, were already living in India. Maybe, you know, in some cases, the children of the diplomatic staff. They all came down here, and this place, which is still there, as the soil of all these countries, to symbolize this unification. In 1968, Auroville roughly looked like the picture on top. It was a barren land, red soil with a high iron content, hardly any trees. The banyan tree, which is right here, which is the physical center of Auroville, was there. But most other trees not. And then before the cyclone struck, on the 29th of December, it was that middle picture. Now a lot of these trees have been blown away or have collapsed in the cyclone. We don't have an updated picture yet to see how much of this is still there. I mean, a lot is still there, but it could be that 40% of it has gone. And the plan is to build a city which has more or less the shape that you see below, which is the shape of a galaxy. The mother had appointed a person by the name of Roger Angeli as the architect and interacted with him over a very long period, a couple of years. He kept on bringing models. In fact, there were even some square models, there were circular models, and then one day he brought a particular model, and then the model said, now you have caught my vision, develop this one. And the one that he developed, that became this. As we will see later in the presentation, this is made up of the city area, which is the white colored and a green belt around it. And the city again is divided into four zones: an industrial zone, an international zone, residential and cultural. Next, please. Okay, from this point onwards, some music will play in the background. Just observe these pictures, and we will talk about the contents later. So these were some impressions of various parts of Auroville. You have seen education, art, culture, and you know, sometimes after this, I simply say thank you very much for your attention. But I suppose you will have some questions. So rather than me giving another speech, why don't you just start asking questions about Auroville, about any topic, and we will try to respond. Yes, please.
What's the intent of the international?
Yeah, the international zone will have pavilions of, basically all countries, or in some cases the continents. Like, for example, Europe probably will not have for each country a pavilion, but maybe a few European pavilions, where those countries can share with the city and with others their unique characteristics, their soul of the nation, and their culture. Already the pavilion of India is partially completed, Bharat Nivas, but the other pavilions have yet to be built, most of them. So it is a sharing of the country's soul, culture. It's not supposed to be an exhibition type of zone. I mean, it has to be dynamic. There will be always changes happening there. It is a sharing of each country's unique features with the other countries and with all of them, and with the people who visit all of them.
Looking at that presentation, you could equally show exactly the same images of any city, of culture, of art, of participation and groups working together in a cooperative and uniting manner. So why is Auroville any different from the existing communities across the globe?
Well, I think what Auver is different in the sense that it is inspired by this vision which I started sharing with you at the very beginning. I mean, if you go to live in Amsterdam or New York, you don't have a common vision. You live there because of some convenience, because your office is nearby or your company has transferred you there. When you come to Auverville to live, it is because you want to be part of manifesting that collective vision. And that I find your remark very interesting, because that is what is the nice thing about Auverville, that it is not a monastery or a religious sect. It is a normal town with everything in it, manufacturing, agriculture. And that is exactly what is also behind the vision of Sri Aurobindo, that spirituality is not about running away from life, as it is traditionally believed to be. You're either in life or you are a spiritual person with a special dress and you go to meditate in the Himalayas and never come back. The whole idea here is that yes, there is definitely something else than day-to-day life, but you have to connect that to the day-to-day life. And then you get schools, you get presentations like this, you get buildings, but they are inspired by something else.
In the video that we saw earlier, it said that the houses aren't owned houses, it belongs to community. So where does the money actually come from?
Yeah, different projects are funded from different sources. To give you some examples, the Matrimandir, which you have seen here, probably you've passed it already, and I suppose you will visit also, has been entirely built with donations from well-wishers from all over the world. I mean, I think thousands of people have participated. Then we have some commercial activities where the profits are contributed to the collective fund, from where again then we finance the operational expenses of Auroville. That is a second source. A third source is that if people join Auroville and they happen to have funds, it is not that you need to have funds to come here, but if you happen to have funds, you can donate to the housing fund so that your house can be built. But we are also building houses that are funded from donations or contributions from Auroville itself for people who don't have funds. So it's a multiple sources are there for different purposes. There are some government grants. There are some institutional donations for specific projects. Like, there are institutions, for example, that are interested in educational research. They have given money to us to do educational research. There may be institutions that are interested in organic farming. They may fund some organic farming projects. Then we have done a lot of renewable energy projects for which funds specifically earmarked for renewable energy were given. So it's a combination of so many different sources for so many different purposes.
So can anyone come to Auroville? Can it be just anyone? How is the process like?
Yeah, the process is, of course, first step is that you understand clearly what Auroville is all about. And if you are convinced that it is your place, then we have here what is called an entry group. And that entry group will process your application. They will maybe exchange a few emails with you. Most people will first make a visit in any case. I mean, the crazy guys like us who just packed their bags and came are becoming less and less. People first make a visit, they look around, is this really where I want to be? Go back, maybe come for a second time. And then the entry process is rather simple. I mean, after an interview with the entry group, where the entry group tries to understand that you have understood the project, that you are not coming for something else, and that also for you to understand better what it's all about, then the person becomes a newcomer. It's called newcomer for 1 year. And after your one year newcomer's period, if everything has worked out for both Auroville as well as the individual, then you get become an Auroville resident, permanent Auroville resident. Today we have a problem in not enough housing. So there is a waiting list of people who want to join Auroville. But at the moment, we are trying to find ways and means to increase the stock of houses. One or two projects have been built recently which has slightly taken care of that demand, but not enough. I mean, we could easily, if tomorrow we will build, say, 300 or 400 apartments, they will be very quickly occupied. So today housing is a bit of a restriction. But the process is quite straightforward. It is, see, it is important for both Auroville as an institution and the individual that the individual understands what he or she is getting into, because it is very often burning all the bridges behind you. It could mean giving up a career. It could mean leaving, not could mean, it means very often if you're not from India, to leave your country and tell to mom and pop, bye, you know, I don't know when I will come back next. So it's a major shift. It's like an immigration for people who are not from India. But even if you are from India and you are working in Bombay, Delhi or Bangalore in a corporate and you make this shift, it's also a very big step. It's not just a geographical step. It's also the step of saying, well, I'm not going for a normal career, but I'm going to join in this experiment. And Auroville is an experiment. Not everything works. Please understand. Many things fail. Many things don't work. And they have to be redone. That's part of an experiment.
So you were drawn here by this vision from Holland. Do you think that you'll go back, or do you think this is your new life now?
I've been here now for the last... I always make a mistake in the calculation. I think 38 years plus. I went out of Auroville for 12 years, but that was for a different reason. I was actually a friend of mine who ran a wind energy company in Holland and who had some difficulties. He asked me to help him to run the Asia operations. And it was a nice time for me to get out because I needed some fresh air. But no, there is no intention for me, I mean, as I'm standing here today, you have to check again next year, but to leave Auroville and go back to Holland. No. I could live in Holland. I mean, in that job also, I had to very often travel to Holland and be there. Then I took another friend of a friend invited me to run another company. For that also, I had to travel all over the world. So I feel comfortable wherever I am. But my place is clearly Auroville. I want to maximize my participation in this project.
You mentioned just before that some things have worked and some things that haven't worked. What have you found that's worked really well? And then you go think of something that perhaps is still...
Yeah, I mean, two examples of what worked well and maybe one or two of what didn't work well. I think what has worked very well is the vision that anyone who comes to Auroville can express himself or herself in any type of work. In other words, you know, people don't go by a CV. If you are a dentist but you want to become an organic farmer, and you know, you can become an organic farmer. It's maybe a bit risky if an organic farmer becomes a dentist, but you know, that flexibility of unending education, which is in the charter, that you can keep on learning and trying different type of responsibilities, I think that has worked out very, very well. That's one good example. Another thing which has worked very well, I believe, is the implementation of sustainable energy. In Auroville, we have a lot of solar. We have, for a small place like this, 350 kilowatt of solar is a lot. We have wind, we have wind pumps, and as I said, we do organic farming. That part has worked well. What I don't think has worked well is two things. For example, I see in the last 5 or 10 years that not enough young people come. I mean, for whatever reason, there are not enough young people. There are young people coming. There are even people who left Auroville and come back. But if you look at the demographic balance, it's not sufficient. And I think it has something to do with that housing issue. Because a person who comes to Auroville at the age of 50 or 45 might have saved some money in an outside job and tell the housing fund, I'm on my own, here is the money, build me a house. But a person who comes at the age of 24, 25 doesn't have that. And that's why I personally am convinced, and we are also discussing that with the housing group, that we have to inject in the economy of Auroville some housing stock so that we can announce to the young people, don't worry about the housing. If you have the energy, if you believe in this vision, come and work. Unpack your suitcase and the next morning you can be up and running. So that is one thing which hasn't worked. The other thing what has not worked out, in my personal view, is that we are not going fast enough with the building of the city. It is still too much of a jungle. I mean, there are 2,000 people, or 2,200 perhaps, and we are too much spread out. Which has also an advantage because then the land is taken care of, but you get a city dynamics only when you have a certain density. In fact, some experts who have studied sustainable urbanization and regenerative townships, which are townships which also generate and don't only consume, have come to the conclusion that sustainable density is somewhere in the range, or is somewhere around 10,000 people per square kilometer. In other words, that is not the high rise of New York, but it is also not the suburbs of California. It is something in between. And what is, of course, very interesting is that Auroville city is 5 square kilometers. And 5 into 10,000 is 50,000, which is the planned population of Auroville. So Auroville actually has, without having ever known that these numbers exist, has that density, but it doesn't exist today. So I would be in favor of accelerating the urbanization of Auroville, but in a sustainable manner, to get more density, to get people living closer together. And there is, fortunately now, there are some two projects. Our planning office is on the top floor here. They are working on some 2-3 projects in the residential zone where those densities will be achieved. But I am a little bit impatient about it. It should happen faster. Anything else? Yes, please.
I'm wondering if you could explain how the economy and work, division of work, occurs within Auroville.
Yeah, it basically works like this, that you are, when you are, after that newcomer period, a confirmed resident, you are a volunteer. It is legally called honorary voluntary worker. And then what happens is that you work in an activity, like Martin works full-time in Auroville Consulting, I work part-time in Auroville Consulting, and I do some other activities in addition. You are maintained by Auroville. And that maintaining by Auroville can happen in two ways. It may happen that the unit, if it is a cash generating activity, generates that cash that maintains the people. Or if it is only a cash consuming activity like teaching in a school, then that comes from the collective fund. But that doesn't make much difference for the individual. The individual is being taken care of by Auroville. We have our own, what we call the Auroville Financial Service, where everyone has an account. So let us take the example of Martin. Auroville Consulting has to credit in the financial service the account of Martin every month. And Martin will get most of that in kind. We don't believe much in a cash economy. So maximum of what you get from the community is given in kind. That means you can go to the solar kitchen to eat. You can pick up clothes from one service. You can ask an Auroville service to come and repair your house. So we try, but of course there are things which are not available. So you still need also to have access to some cash, or if you go to Pondicherry and you want to have a coffee. But the intention is to make economy as much as possible an in-kind economy, where the need of the person, which is unique, we are also not trying to achieve a communistic system where everybody is treated the same, because the needs are not the same. A parent with 3 children has different needs than a bachelor who stays in an apartment. So there is a continuous attempt to identify the actual needs of each person. There are some guidelines, and then to fulfill them. That's broadly how it works. There are also people who have come to Auroville and have said, look, I give the example of the 45 plusers who have worked. They say, look, I don't want to be a burden on the community. I do it on my own. I personally believe that we have to discourage that category. Because if you get too many people who are on their own, the economy won't take off. You can always have in a society some people like that, but there should be a percentage which is high of young people with fire in the belly who actually keep the economic engine going. So that's how I see the future of the economy. It is young people coming, setting up new enterprises. We have a lot of enterprises. We have lots of units, and a lot of them are doing very creative things. Handicrafts, furniture, water filters, electronic stuff, software, graphics, a lot of creative energy is there. But that needs to keep up. And that's why I have identified a little bit of a demographic imbalance creeping in, which, as I believe, it can be rectified by creating more accommodation.
What of situations where people are incapable or they need expensive external assistance? So what I'm thinking of here is if someone is severely disabled or elderly and then they need to go to a hospital? How is that part of the...
Yeah, so we have an internal health service which can take care of the basics. And then we have a health fund where it's almost like an internal insurance. So there is a fund that can take care of situations where people need, say, an operation in a specialty hospital or whatever other care. It's funded by the health fund.
A question around governance. I mean, my personal question is such a spiritual place, but as the city grows, I wonder whether people will still be people and there might be problems like theft or outside influences of alcohol or drugs coming in. How is that controlled?
Yeah. No, you see, in a place, in our view, you have all the problems of the world, as you have very well identified at the beginning. So you also have all the human problems of the world. You have greed, you have jealousies, you have anger, you have love, you have sympathy, you have everything is there. How it works on the governance level is, I would like to explain it in two ways, the more legal part and the more de facto part. Legally, we are a foundation. So there is a foundation called Auroville Foundation. That Auroville Foundation has a governing board. It has got a working committee. The working committee is composed of people from Auroville residents. There is an Auroville Council. The Auroville Council deals more with the internal issues, and the working committee more with the external issues, the liaison with the outside world. So when anything escalates to a point where it cannot be resolved within the settlement where the people live, or within the unit where the people work, it usually escalates first to the Auroville Council, if it is an internal issue. And say 8 out of 10 cases, they can solve the issue. If even the Auroville Council cannot solve it because it is a very difficult issue, then the working committee gets involved. And eventually, but that has so far, I don't think has happened ever, but eventually the governing board could get involved. Most of the issues are resolved within people's, if it is a residential issue, within the place where they live. If it is an issue of people not being able to work together in a unit, within that unit. But if not, it usually gets cleared at the Auroville Council level. As far as the units are concerned, we call them units, we don't call them companies. So we have all these units, like Auroville Consulting is a unit, there's an electrical service, a water service, the farms are organized as units. They are being managed by the people actually doing the work. And very often, I would say a semi-formal arrangement. But it works. I mean, there is no, let us say, delegated authority plan that, you know, you can sign this and you can sign that. The groups are also not so big that you need very complex processes. So the units are managing their own affairs. There is a coordination, for example, of all the commercial units called ABC, Auroville Board of Commerce. So they meet, I don't know how often, maybe once a month, where they share any issues they have at the commercial level. Then there is the Auroville Farm Group. They will share all issues they have with farming. There is the Auroville Services Group, Infrastructure Group. They discuss all infrastructure matters together. So by a frequent and also with a high level of engagement coordination, you can actually deal with most of the governance issues before they get out of control.
Just following on from the next question, about the units, is there some sort of, not restriction so much, but general size that they have? I imagine if they grow too large with too many people working, and that would be hard to self-manage and self-regulate. Is there any sort of planning for as they grow, or as one size is reached, another unit is developed?
No, actually, I would say that, that's a good question, but that's another point where I feel we are not successful enough. There are, in my personal view, too many units today. On the contrary, there are many units that are duplicating work and that could work better together. But the problem there is, if you combine, say, 10 units together, maybe you kill the entrepreneurial spirit and you make it an institution. So you have to find that balance always. There is no rule that says that a unit can't grow beyond a certain size. I think the growth restriction comes mainly because of people need. See, we have today only 2,200 people in any case. So, and out of that, adults will be 800. So in any case, no single unit can be more than 800 of volunteers. I mean, you can, of course, hire people from outside. So the answer to your question is there is no limitation to size.
For a child born into Oroville, say they go up here, turn 18, and they want to leave Oroville, they don't have any, will the Oroville Council provide any sort of financial support for them to leave? Because they won't have any sort of cash savings. And the education they receive here, will it be on par with the outside world for them to...
No, the Oroville Council does not provide, does not have a budget to support young people who want to leave. That may come in the future, but today the resources are simply not there. Apparently, although the Oroville education is quite different from what it normally is, it is good enough because a lot of people have left, young people, and they have been able to plug into the society and take up higher education elsewhere. So it forms a very good base. Quite similar to the education that is given in the Sri Aurobindo Ashram at Pondicherry. In fact, many of my friends who have studied there, same thing, it is not a formal, you know, there is no formal certification, they are getting absorbed. So how have the people who have done it done it? Well, in many cases they got a scholarship, they wrote to a university, maybe with a bit of a help of a friend who bridged the first 2-3 months to get settled. People have networks. And then what is interesting is many of them actually come back afterwards. They gain new knowledge outside and new experiences and they come back. And again give back to our will what they have learned. But there is no formal funding. You cannot knock on a door and say, I need, say, 3 lakhs of rupees because I want to go and study in England. It's not possible. I mean, we don't have that wealth in the place to support it. But many people have found their own way to do it. You see, don't forget that this generation still has, it's going to be more difficult maybe in 10, 20 years from now, but the present youngsters are, say, from people like me who have come as the first pioneers of our world. So still have some relatives or friends outside to whom they can ask, can you anchor me for the first 3 months and find me a place? And in maybe 4 generations from now, that may become more difficult, but at the same time not, because then the total population would have increased. So there will be other informal networks that take care of this. So I don't think it will be an issue. Actually, I find it myself very good that people go out, because see, people like us, we have made a conscious choice to come here. But you can't force upon a child to also be here. So when a young person says, look, I love it here, but I love it much better to go outside, then we say, please try it out and go. There's no restriction.
I have 2 questions. The first one is, what happens if someone does want to go traveling or go out of the country for a bit, and you said that they don't really get an income as such, so how do they have...
Now, we have some funds for emergency travel, so that means if somebody has to, say, be taken abroad for death of a family or an operation, but we do not have, let us say, a fund travel budget. I mean, it's not available. So then you have to ask your grandmother or your rich uncle or win the lottery or travel, and maybe where the place that you're going to, you can do some work and earn back your ticket. But it's not, we don't have enough funds. And also, I think the queue might be quite rather long at that particular counter. You start announcing free travel to anywhere in the world, it will be a bit difficult.
And the other question was, what happens if somebody no longer fits the criteria or no longer shares the vision of Oroville? Is there ever been anybody who's been asked to leave? Or?
Yes, there are a few cases, very few, I mean, I think less than 5, if I remember even the ones, where this has happened. And there are also people who do it on their own. I mean, look, it is quite possible, and I know myself several people, who say, look, I had a wonderful time in Oroville for 20 years. I have learned a lot. But I think my battery is now charged enough. I want to go out, and maybe I come back after 10 years. I mean, that flexibility is also there. it is not that everybody who comes here has to stay here for the rest of his or her life. It is of course important, but it happens naturally that there is a fixed population that keeps the place running. Because if everybody becomes, keeps on going and coming, then there will be no continuity. But fortunately, most people here are of a permanent resident status. But I know one person, he came even earlier than me, and after I think 30 years of being here, he said, I have considered Auroville as a school. I've learned everything that I could learn in that school, and now I'm moving on. And I think that's a very healthy and honest conclusion. Because it's also dangerous, or not dangerous, but it is not good if you stay in a place simply because you're staying there. Then all this vision of unending education and progress, they are gone. You have to be here because you still feel you're learning and growing. That's what I believe. Staying somewhere by default is not really good for us as human beings to grow. Anything else you would like to know about energy? Yes, please.
I was just thinking, you mentioned before how the units, if they get too big, they can become institutions. Is it possible that the size of Auroville becomes bigger and bigger, the similarities between here and outside of Auroville actually become quite great?
Even today, I mean, the similarities, as he pointed out very rightly, the outside appearance of all of it is institutions, industries, schools. So you have to not go by just the outer appearance, you have to go what is behind it, what has inspired that. And it is more the subtle manifestation than the only the physical. What I said, by the way, was not that the units have to become lower, have to become larger. So what I meant was that if you would, say, ask 15 lampshade handicraft centers to become one, which makes logical sense, less overheads, the risk is that you kill the entrepreneurial spirit of 10 entrepreneurs and you create 10 department heads who have less interest. So you have to find that balance, that's what I meant. Always, I mean, not only in our field, that applies to the whole world. How do you, in a company, for example, how do you introduce systems and processes that don't kill the creativity? But you need systems and processes. One simple thing, the company has to start in the morning at a particular time. As simple as that. And it has holidays on those days. Now, how can you have these type of systems and processes and not kill the creativity of the people? That is where you have to find a balance. You are engineers. You want some creativity, you want some freedom. You may like to work at a very crazy hour in the night because that's when you get inspiration. So if I tell you you should work only between 9 and 5, I may kill that inspiration. But if I don't ask you to come from 9 to 5, then I have to ask the whole backup staff and the network operators to also be there 24 hours, and the watchmen and the canteen and everything. So, this is all the time where you have to find. Of course, nowadays with internet, it becomes much easier to have flexi hours. Auroville has definitely to be always watchful, like everybody else, not to become a bureaucratic institution. And keep that flame of the original vision and encourage people's individual creativity.
Maybe I've got a question more around energy. How do you go about planning for energy? And if everyone owns the energy that is created, how do you fairly attribute that within the community?
If everyone owns the energy?
Yeah, so if you have energy that's created here, how do you actually decide who gets it? Because people have made it for needs or for wants?
What we have done is that the buildings, including the residences which are connected to the outside grid, they have a particular energy quota which is honestly divided, equally divided, above which you have to find a contribution. So you get a basic kilowatt hours per day or per month from the collective fund. But if somebody inherits from his auntie 1 million and air conditions his house and his energy bill goes 5 times, the collector fund won't pay it. So we make sure that everyone has the basic energy and water. And beyond, first of all, we discourage that you go beyond that, because we want to be a self-sufficient and a self-supporting and a sustainable community. But if somebody would do it, then you're on your own. And maybe even in the night we'll go and cut that wire. So that they go back to a more sustainable model. And then there are many houses in Auroville that are not even connected to that grid. They have solar. And in solar, of course, you know, you take the kilowatt hours that the sun gives you, and which are more on a sunny day and less on a cloudy day.
Maybe one more question before we break for lunch.
Can I ask your story? How did you find out about Auroville and decide to come here?
I found out actually by several tracks in parallel. So one track was that in the university where I was studying, I discovered one day a book of Sri Aurobindo. I can still visualize in the corner where it was standing. And I pulled it out and started reading it, and I got more and more interested. Then there was a person who had traveled to India and who was staying two blocks away from where we stayed and used to come to our house very often. And that person had visited Auroville and Pondicherry and told us about it. In fact, the sequence is that person told me about it, but it went sort of 1 year in, 1 year out. I just heard the story, said, okay, nice, and left it. And then when I found that book in the university, then I put the two things together. Was this the thing that he was talking about? So I contacted the person again. Is this what you meant? Yes, this is what I meant. Oh, wow, this is incredible. And then I started reading another book of an author on Sri Aurobindo and on the whole integral yoga of Sri Aurobindo, which got me even more excited. And then I did what nowadays is not so much done anymore, but I just packed my bags. And took the cheapest way to come here, which was at that time taking the boat from Rotterdam to London, getting into Kuwait Airways from London to Kuwait on a ticket that I purchased from somebody who had the travel service in his bedroom. This must have been the leftover tickets that nobody else wanted you would get. Then I went from Kuwait to Bombay. And in fact, when I landed in Bombay, I had completely forgotten, I don't know why, but I had not booked anything. I had not booked a hotel, I just landed there. And then I realized, well, I can't go straight away to Auroville, I have to stay somewhere tonight. So what happened is, I still remember that I came out of the airport at the unusual hour of, say, 7 o'clock in the morning. Most flights land in Bombay in the night. But I came at 7 o'clock, and outside was this bus, which is run by ex-servicemen, ex-army men. They take you to all the hotels in those days. So I was the only passenger in the bus. So the bus driver said, you know, my son saves foreign coins, collects foreign coins. Do you have some foreign coins? Of course I have foreign coins. So I gave him some foreign coins. He said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to show you Bombay. So this man took me in that bus, minibus, and he took me all over Bombay. And, you know, it was an incredible introduction to the country, although I was very tired, but, you know, here and there. And then he, in fact, even found a hotel for me. He said, look, what is your budget? I said, very small budget. Okay, I'll give you a small hotel. So he put me in the hotel, and I slept in that hotel. And then the next morning, I asked the reception, look, I need a train from here to Chennai. And how do I go about getting a train? He said, well, go to the station, buy a ticket, and go. So I walked to the station, which was nearby. And I did not know that in India, you have to buy always two tickets. Now it is one, computerized, but one ticket for the journey and one to reserve the sleeper. And I didn't get the second one. So I had this ticket to go from Bombay to Chennai, but I had no sleeper. So I ended up in what they call the unreserved compartment, which is all the people who were not reserved, who went last minute for an emergency, and it is a complete chaos in that compartment. But I was again lucky. There was a family, about seven members, and they were traveling also to Chennai last minute, so also unreserved. And they had kept their luggage on a plank. So what we decided is by time we will sleep on that plank. And then they had brought a kerosene stove. They were cooking in the train. So I enjoyed my first Indian meals oily parotta and dal and all that in that tray where these people, at that time, I was not allowed, but they were cooking actually in the compartment. So then after 2 days and two nights, that's what it took those days, I ended up in Chennai. So then I told somebody, I had already told somebody in the last part of the train, how do I get from Chennai to Pondicherry? And it was a priest, a Christian priest. He said, well, I'm going to the place where the buses go from Chennai to Pondicherry. You come with me, I put you in the bus. So he took me to the bus stop. And then I was in the bus, was fully full. I had this big backpack. And then again, very nice, the conductor said, you take my seat. We've come all the way from there. So I was given the conductor's seat, kept the bag on my lap. And that was, in those days, a 4.5 hour journey. So after 4.5 hours of bus, 2 days and two nights of train, the 12 hour trip by Kuwait Airlines, the sleepless night in the boat from Rotterdam to London, I finally ended up in Pondicherry. And I had imagined that the ashram, because I was first going to go to ashram, would be like a university campus, a wall with a gate, and you ring the bell, and then somebody opens the door, and then you can say, well, there I am. But it was not like that. The ashram was just intermingled with the normal Pondicherry life. There are buildings all over the place. So I was told, okay, go to that building. So I went to a particular building, which is the Samadhi, the main ashram building. And I said, well, I come from Holland, and I'm going to join Holland, and what next? Well, you have come a bit late, it's 10:30. Let's see what we can do. So they put me in a rickshaw, and something was told in the local language, which at that time I didn't speak, and I was dropped in a guest house. And then finally, I collapsed in a bed, in a mosquito net. It was my first night of sleep after so many days. And then I woke up in the morning in Pondicherry. And then my first trip to Oroville, actually, I made on a tractor. So I rang up to Oroville. There was only two telephones in Oroville at that time. The number I had to dial was 801. I still remember the number. And somebody said, you want to come to Oroville? Yes. Okay, go to so-and-so place. The tractor is coming with some materials. You can sit on that tractor. So I went with my back, sat on the tractor side, and then on a very bumpy road, and I reached Oroville. And then I said, where can I stay in Oroville? Well, you cannot stay anywhere right now. Go back to Pondicherry. You come back after about a week. And after about 10 days, they gave me accommodation. So that's my story of So thanks a lot. Have a very nice time in Oroville. Martin and the team will take care of you. I hope that you really experience Oroville also to have no borders, and that you can go back to Australia after your trip with lots of new experience. Thanks a lot.